5:07, your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. Meet Ronge Randy with you. Take it or leave it. Coming up, send in your text to the Hot Shots text line 65780. Lenny Dykstra was busy over the weekend while at a Jersey Mike's for lunch. He took his teeth out so he could eat a sandwich. Unfortunately, he forgot to pick his teeth up when he left, and his $80,000 dentures took a trip to the dumpster. But don't think that stopped Dykstra. He showed up later that day, ready to go on a search and rescue mission.
I left him in the restaurant and whatever, the mics, and they're here in that dumpster, and me and Big John are going after it, and guess what? Nails never fails. The teeth will be back. All right? Nails out from somewhere in New Jersey. Okay, Nails updating on my search. Come on down here. Look, what Nails is doing is looking for my teeth because I broke it down to these two bags. I have black gloves. But what I just learned is all the waste that goes out there. There's some good food in here, man. Good! Yes! Hear that? Yeah, man. That's the Nails hanging out in the deep, deep woods. Look, hey, all night, all morning, I just found my teeth, okay? Nails never fails.
He's okay. Awesome.
Holy crap, that's sad.
No, that's great. Like, Nails never fails.
Who the hell is Nails? That's
Nails Dykstra. Lenny Nails Dykstra.
That's his nickname?
Yeah.
He spent nine hours going through dumpsters looking for his teeth.
Tough. Yeah. Tough as nails.
Okay, because he's talking like he's with somebody else.
Well, he doesn't have teeth.
Okay. No, I don't mean like it. That's not what I mean, Randy. I'm saying he's talking like there's another person with him.
Oh, yeah. He and Big John.
All right. Okay. So I feel bad for the dude because there's clearly something very wrong with him, okay? But there are so many things I don't understand. First of all, his teeth cost 80 grand. Is that what they cost?
Yeah.
Is it? Okay, I didn't know that. Second, how do you take your teeth out to eat a sandwich?
That's kind of weird.
Don't you need your teeth to eat the sandwich?
You'd think so. I don't know.
What in the hell?
It's pretty interesting. It's Nails never fails, and he's interesting. Dateline Lakewood, Colorado, during a baseball game Saturday for seven-year-olds, a huge brawl broke out after parents charged the field following a controversial call by the umpire, who was 13 years old. Take it or leave it, they should have simply fired that kid.
Oh, I'll take it.
Yeah, just fire the kid. Don't get into a brawl where you have four people hurt, one person suffering serious injuries. Just fire the umpire.
Hey. Look, we've been talking about robot umps for a long time. It should be in Little League, too.
I couldn't agree more.
And sir, if you're 13 years old and can't get the job done, I don't care what your age is, you need to move on and find a different line of work.
Yeah. I don't know if it was a sir. It might have been a young lady that was the umpire.
Okay, team. Young lady. It's time to move on and find a different line of work because you're just not cut out for this business,
and
this Little League umpiring business.
Some people just are not cut out for umpiring. Some people aren't cut out just to deal with players.
Randy, you ever heard of the Royal Ascot?
I have.
The horse race?
Mm-hmm.
It happens in England, and apparently a horse got out a little bit early, got spooked out of the gate and took off, and was on a run, a free run, for quite some time. A horse called Show Me, Show Me. They eventually corralled him and brought him back. Take it or leave it, if the horse gets out of the gate early, they should just be set free.
I'll take that. Yeah, let it go.
This horse is having a great time, and I'm looking at the video right now, just running down the track all by himself, nothing but open land in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
He looks happy. That's the happiest that horse has probably ever been.
That's so nice.
Just let him be free.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of umpires, that little kid should have turned out a tweet that said, hashtag disappointed, hashtag lead by example, hashtag not appreciated, hashtag violence, hashtag temper tantrum, hashtag inaction, hashtag not tolerated, hashtag make an example of, hashtag one game suspension, hashtag repeat offender, hashtag nonsense, hashtag MLBUA, at MLB, at Padres, at Buster ESPN.
What are they doing? What the hell are they doing? MLB told them to cut it out.
I love
that. Did you see that?
Yeah.
So what Randy is referencing is the Major League Baseball Umpires Union yesterday, after the Manny Machado incident in which he was thrown out, he got suspended for a game. the union tweeted out that the punishment wasn't enough, and they sent out that.
Yeah.
Like, they were whining about it. It's really freaking pathetic, and obviously nobody is on their side because nobody likes umpires as it is. That's bad.
Pretty funny.
Come on, people. Hey, I got one more take it or leave it before we get to meat.
Got it.
Take it or leave it, that 13-year-old umpire,
mm-hmm.
Angel Hernandez is more sensitive than they are.
I'll take that, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to take it too.
Big Sis, what do you have for us?
Take it or leave it, the federal correction system would disagree that nails never fails.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Except for tests. He passes a lot of those. Or wait, is it bad when you pass it or fail it? I can't remember.
Take it or leave it.
Positive.
What?
Huh? What?
Huh? Take it or leave it. They should change it to Hollywood Casino Amphitheater and have a hammered Holy sing Gloria along with every act.
Take it. That's pretty funny. Good idea.
I'll take it. I could do that. I can listen to that all day. You know how the station in town here played Gloria for 24 straight hours? Can't we just play 24 straight hours of the Hully remix? Oh. I'm on board.
Take it or leave it. If anybody with the TV networks in town has an issue with BT, it's on them because we all knew what we were getting when he went on TV.
Yeah, I'll take it. I don't think it's the networks as much as it is some of the so-called fans. It's a vocal minority, though.
What, the letter writers?
And the tweeters.
Oh.
People that don't want broadcasters to talk. Kind of a weird concept. So, like, you get paid to talk, and they say, yeah, why are you talking?
Hey, you guys talk a lot. This is a talk show.
Zero fun, sir. Take it or leave it. The Cardinals are great offensively for the next two games, but flop again at the beginning of the Angels series.
Leave it.
What do you think's going to happen?
I think the Angels' pitching is terrible, and I think the Cardinals will hit that rather well.
So then what about the next 2 days?
Well, you won't get to Trevor Richards tonight because he's a local guy, and you won't get to Zach Gallen tomorrow because you traded him. That's the reverse.
Okay, and I'm going to take what you said.
And take it or leave it, our friend Ed would have helped Nails find his teeth.
Hey, I will take Ed. That because Ed would have found that within minutes.
Minutes. As if the Cardinals, thanks, Big Sis, thanks for your text to the Hot Shots text line 65780. As if the Cardinal hitting isn't bad enough, the rotation has plenty of questions as well. Will they lead to a decision this week? That's next on 101 ESPN. That is our friend Jen Langosh from MLB.com talking about the Cardinals starting rotation, which has been in flux during the course of the month with the injury to Adam Wainwright and with the demotion of Michael Wacha for a time. In the month of June, Jack Flaherty, 0.1 with a 0-1 with a 5.57 ERA. Hudson has been the Cardinals' best starter, 1-0 with a 2.33. Miles Michaelis, 1-2 with a 4.80. Wacha, 1-1 with a 3.65. Waino, before he got hurt, 1-1 with a 2.19. And Genesis Cabrera was 0-1 with a 6.14. The other start this month made by Daniel Ponce de Leon, who starts tonight, and he has a 2.25 ERA. So when you look at the entire body of work, it is not impressive. And Jen mentioned that this week is an audition for the 4 and 5 spots in the rotation with Wainwright returning, Wacha getting a start. Those two, if they pitch reasonably, don't even have to pitch reasonably well. If they show they're healthy, they're going to be in the rotation, Raj.
Yeah, they're going to be there. And it's just, it's about them being healthy. I don't know how effective they're going to be. Wainwright was okay as the season went on, until the injury happened. But there's still a lot of uncertainty with him, even though he did, and I don't want to say he pitched great because he didn't pitch great. He pitched as well as a fifth starter in the National League should pitch. And that was the reason they still have him here, is he is serving as their number five starter. But because of the way everybody else has underperformed, it's kind of bumped him up a little bit. And that's not a good position to be in. You shouldn't be in a spot where Adam Wainwright is your three or four,
no.
or considered your three or four. If that's the case, the rotation as a whole,
in its entirety,
is in trouble. And this is a team that, in terms of ERA, is below average. In terms of the fielding independent pitching, a number I know you love, they are third from the bottom in the National League. They are dead last.
I call that the king in his court stat. Remember the king in his court, softball pitcher, who pitched with all of his fielders sitting down? He was totally fielding independent. He just struck everybody out. He was awesome.
Oh, yeah. I'm unfamiliar with that.
So he definitely lived by the FIP.
But also, Randy, they don't strike out very many guys. They are the lowest in strikeouts. And that's in the National League. That is not good when we're in an era of baseball where strikeouts are a big part of the game. Now, that may not be fun baseball for a lot of people to watch, but that's how you win right now, is you don't let guys get the bat on the ball. You prevent them from doing that. They've also been issuing far too many walks. They're second to worst in the National League in giving in allowing other teams to reach base via the walk. So there are a lot of things here, and giving up too many home runs. They're just there's and this is just the starting pitching we're talking about, not even touching what the bullpen is doing. And I'm fine with the bullpen, I guess. I think they're okay, but in terms of the rotation, the issues that we were concerned about before the season started are playing out right now.
And there are going to be legitimate number one frontline starters on the market. And I don't include Marcus Stroman. The two guys I include here that are going to perhaps be available are Madison Bumgarner, who is, and Max Scherzer, who may be. And if you get that number one guy, all of a sudden things look so much brighter because Jack Flaherty or Miles Michaelis, rather than having to be a number one, is a number two. Let's presume right now that Flaherty is the Cardinals' number one. He's a number two. Michaelis goes from being a two to a three. Then you have Hudson being a three to a four. You go into a series, you feel a whole lot better with Bumgarner, Flaherty, and Michaelis than you do with Flaherty, Michaelis, Hudson.
You do feel a whole lot better. I'd feel even better than that, or I'd say we're really cooking if you had Carlos Martinez in this rotation, but it looks like he's not going to be part of it.
Sounds like he wants to be, but it doesn't seem like the Cardinals are enamored of the idea.
I still don't understand what's going on there.
And another awful start yesterday for Alex Reyes at Memphis. So the Cardinals are struggling there, too, in terms of getting him back on the beam. And it's possible that lat injury last year just messed him up.
Maybe. What I'm saying is I'd feel better with Mad Bum or Scherzer in addition to Carlos rotation. Not instead of. Like, I mean, if you had both of those guys and you had the old Carlos Martinez, and for whatever reason it just isn't working out right now or they don't feel like he can do it, but if you had the old guy in there, the guy from a couple of years ago, that's what I'm wanting. That's what would make them, I think, a real true contender. And that's what we're talking about here. I don't want this team to be full of so many ifs and so many uncertainties. I would like to look at my rotation and go, you guys are in trouble. The National League, the rest of the National League Central, you're in serious trouble because of what we're trotting out there every 5 days.
I will say this. I don't think the Cardinals are idiots. I think if there was a chance that they could get Carlos Martinez to be a starter, that they would do everything they could to get him to be a starter. I don't believe he's in the bullpen as punishment. They have clear reservations about this year, his ability to become a starting pitcher.
And it's the kind of thing we're never going to find out. Well, we might find out after the fact, but we're not going to know now exactly what the problem is. You know,
well, he never got himself ready. He didn't exercise his shoulder properly during the offseason. And then because he didn't throw at all during spring training, he never had a chance to build up innings. And the Cardinals decided, and they said it was a physical issue, not a mental issue, that he wouldn't be able to they wouldn't be able to build him up to be a starter.
See, and that seems weird to me because Dallas Keuchel's going to start, and he didn't have a job for half the season.
He also didn't have three trips to the DL last year.
That's true. He didn't, but, you know, where he wasn't pitching at game speed. So I don't know. If it's a physical thing, fine, then it's a physical thing. But it is still an incredibly odd situation. I know you said you were keeping Marcus Stroman out of this mix. Do you not like him?
Not as a frontline, top-of-the-rotation guy. I like him as a three, but they need somebody for everybody else to fall in place behind.
If they can't get one of those guys, I'd be perfectly fine with an addition of somebody like Strowman. And I agree with the path you're going down. I understand that. This team needs a number one. If they're true, if they're honest and really wanting to win this year, they got to have a number one guy. But if they can't get that, I have no problem with Strowman, who's pitching really, really well this season. I have no problem with that. There might be some concern about whether or not that's who he's truly going to be for the rest of the year, and I understand it. And you feel more confident because of the track record of Scherzer and of Bumgarner, but I would have no problems with the Cardinals picking up Marcus Stroman.
And by the way, Mad Bum does have the Cardinals on his 8-team no-trade list.
Well, he ain't no dummy because he knows he can use that as leverage.
Right. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, and it's time to send us your questions, whatever they may be. Get them into the Hot Shots text line, 65780. The Sports Six-Pack is next on 101 ESPN. And we appreciate your text to the Hot Shots text line, 65780. With your questions for us, here is Big Ziz.
Little hockey to get things started with Maroon, Sundqvist, and Barbashev. Two out of the three. Who are you keeping?
This coming season?
Yes.
Maroon, Sundqvist, Barbashev. Well, all three. Sundqvist and Barbashev are both restricted, so you'll be able to get them back at a reasonable price. And Patrick Maroon's price will go up a little bit. Term will go up a little bit. But to me, that in terms of your UFAs, and you only have two regulars that are UFAs, he and Gunnarsson, you keep him around.
Gunnarsson's probably the one who's the odd man out here of all those guys.
Randy, the texts have been coming in. People are wanting a tattoo update.
We'll get the tattoo, and we will air it next Monday. Next Monday will be the airing of the tattoo from 3 to 7. And you'll be able to hear it, see it. I think we'll have it on our Facebook page, if not on our website. And I know I've gotten a lot of response to this, so we'll get it all taken care of Monday.
I'm excited because we're going to have 4 hours of zzzz in the background.
It's going to be sensational.
And Randy wincing in pain.
I'm not anticipating wincing in pain.
You think you're going to be okay?
Oh, I'll be fine. I'm a tough
guy.
Is
it getting it now? Is it just the outline? Are they going to do the shading and the coloring?
No, they're going to do everything.
Everything.
The whole thing.
Okay.
If you had to make a bold prediction, you're getting hot takey for the Blues offseason, what would that be?
My hot take would be that the Blues will move Braden Schenn.
That is a really good one.
To clear salary cap space and get Rob Thomas in there as your number two center.
All right. If I have to go hot takey here, it's that Jake Allen is still on the team next season.
Good call.
Which I don't think is going to happen.
We get these texts all the time as well. What cap does Albert wear into the Hall of Fame?
Blank like Tony. If he gets
I
to
think
choose.
So.
If the Hall of Fame chooses, it'll be a Cardinal cap. Logic would dictate that it would be a Cardinal cap simply because if he had retired after the 2011 season, he would be a Hall of Famer. There's nothing that he did in Anaheim to make the Hall of Fame. He just enhanced his resume there
right.
with some counting numbers. So it should be the Cardinal cap, but if he gets to choose and it'll be basically 50-50 in terms of years at each place, then I think he'll wind up going blank.
He spent a lot of time there, and some of the milestone hits, home runs happened while he was there.
Right.
So when you look at those highlights later on, he's going to be in an Angels uniform when you see those.
Yeah.
So I there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's about right. But you are also correct. He was a Hall of Famer before he left town.
Yeah, and the Hall of Fame might just look at that and say, yeah, you're going in as a Cardinal.
Earlier we were talking about BT on the broadcast, him and Danny Mac going back and forth. What do you think the hardest sport to broadcast on TV is?
I would say hockey, right?
Hockey, I think overall, because you have to conserve your words. I think on TV, if you do it right and you let the picture tell the story, if you're a competent broadcaster, you can do it. Some are much better than others.
Right.
What makes Joe Buck great is that you have a million people yelling in your ear and you have promos and you have to maintain personality and try to at least explain why things are happening. And that's what makes Joe great. But if I had to pick one, I would say it's probably that analyst in hockey. To throw that woman into the playoffs for the Blues series against Winnipeg was terrible.
Well, somebody who knew hockey really well but had no broadcasting experience. And I'm sure they've done that before with other guys, other players, other former players. But I don't know if they got thrown into the hockey playoffs.
No, and remember, she almost talked over a goal. You have to be really concise. And
right.
As an analyst for hockey, you kind of have to do your work on TV in between the blue lines, in the neutral zone. And that's what makes it tough.
And, I mean, learning to articulate it, because she's a gold medalist.
Yeah,
she clearly knows hockey really well.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of knowing how to deliver it. And if you're going to do it, look, former athletes get thrown into big-time analyst positions all the time. There's nothing new about it. Thrown into the Monday Night Football booth, and you have very little work. This happens everywhere. But I would think if you're going to do that with somebody, and maybe there's a precedent that I'm not aware of, I don't think you do it when the playoffs start.
No,
I think you do it in the regular season and let them work some kinks out first. Mm.
Jordan Binnington is the obvious one here, but even guys who may not be up for a new contract now, is there anybody else on this Blues team that really played themselves into a raise? Their play really stood out like that.
Well, next year, Petro, his contract is up after next year. Shen obviously will get a raise, and it might not happen here. And I think those guys that you talked about at the beginning, Big Sis, simply because now they've played another full year and they're part of a Stanley Cup champion. When you're talking about guys like Barbashev and Sundqvist, yeah, they are obviously guys that have played themselves into a race. Parayko's under long-term contract.
Right.
Half your defense is. I don't think there's anybody else really that you say in the next couple of years, that guy has to get a significant raise.
Parayko's not a free agent until 2022, but if there's a guy who was good and then became a beast in the playoffs, he would be my pick.
Yeah, he might be the best defenseman in the league.
He was awesome.
Right now. And the Binnington situation is going to be interesting. Do the Cardinals go the way that Anaheim did with Gibson and give him 51 over 8 years? Gibson was taken in the same draft. He's had obviously more time at the NHL level than Binnington, but he hasn't won a Stanley Cup. This is a really unique situation for the Blues, for Binnington, and for Mike Liute.
It's never happened like this.
No. So I don't know where you go contract-wise. He's one of those guys, though, the rare instance in sports where you should pay him for what he has done.
I think you would regret it more as an organization if you undervalue him as opposed to overvaluing him. Whenever they make whatever deal they're going to here this offseason, if you were to do the wrong thing, and I mean, he's going to have to take some kind of deal, right? But you don't want to undersell what he's accomplished and run the risk of pissing him off.
Right.
I don't think you want to do that right now. So it's probably better to err on the side. You can't get crazy with him, but you better err on the side of taking care of a guy who did something your organization's never had, helped you get there. I think people would be more upset if they went the other direction.
And you might be looking at a bridge deal here because he can become a UFA in 2 years.
Right.
So you give him a 2-year deal worth between $7 and $8 million. And then after that, you can either give him the monster contract. And by the way, then you have Bo off the books, and you probably do have Shen off the books, and things look a little different financially for you. And the cap will probably go up. So it might benefit him to sign the bridge deal and be on the precipice of free agency before he signs the next big contract. Thanks, Big Sis.
Thank you.
And thanks for your text to the Hot Shots text line, 65780. Up next, we're going to dig a little deeper into tonight's NHL awards and some off-season moves for the Blues. ESPN.com's Emily Kaplan joins us next on 101 ESPN. Hey, we want your mic drops. If you could do one thing to fix the Cardinals, you just get one thing, what would it be? Leave your mic drop with the 101 ESPN app. Right now, we're going to go to the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line on 101 ESPN, and Emily Kaplan from ESPN.com joins us. Emily with Chris Ranji. This is Randy Carricker. Thanks so much for taking some time today. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm in Vegas, so I obviously can't complain. How are you guys?
Everything's good. Have you seen the cup at all?
You know what? The cup is ubiquitous. You'll learn that, you guys especially, is the next year. It's going to pop up everywhere. So I probably saw it and didn't even realize it.
Has the cup, so you haven't seen it in the pool?
No, I missed those visuals. It was in a pool?
Yeah, I mean, they were in a pool, and then I believe it was not Bortuzzo. I think it was Perron got pushed into the pool by one of who was the dude again? Oh, Tyson Fury, one of his dudes.
Yeah.
Did you see that, Randy?
I don't know if everyone's in their right state of mind right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure everybody's having a really good time. But this is the exciting part. And Emily, as you know, you just mentioned it, that when a city wins the cup, you pretty much see that thing all summer around town.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, I think last year what the Washington Capitals did was really special. They wanted to share it with the community, which, you know, for that franchise had waited so long to win a Stanley Cup. I know the Blues have waited, you know, just as long, if not it feels like longer. And so I have a feeling, you know, the guys on this team, when you get to know them and you see how important it was for them to link the past with the current and the future, they're going to share it with the community as well. So you're going to see it at bars, you're going to see it in backyards, maybe you'll see it in fountains, just like the Washington Capitals did last year.
ESPN.com's Emily Kaplan with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Okay, we've got the awards. Let's start with the ones that the Blues are up for, and we'll start with the Jack Adams Trophy as the Coach of the Year. And as great a job as Craig Berube did, based upon the regular season, for the entire regular season, most people are looking at Barry Trotz. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's tricky, and this one's voted on by the broadcaster, so writers like me don't get a vote on this one. I have a feeling that it's going to be Barry Trotz, but there was a late push in the season for John Cooper because of, you know, he led the Tampa Bay Lightning to historic lengths. Of course, this award just like kind of feels awkward because, as you said, it's only voted on based off of the regular season, and if we considered everything that went down in the playoffs, like, you'd be like, God, it has to go to Craig Berube. Of course he did the best coaching job, but because it's the regular season, my money would be on Trotz as number one, and then John Cooper as 1A.
So, I mean, you would imagine, and locally here, we love what Berube has done, and he's getting all the attention he deserves. Had he been the coach the entire season, and they did what they did, but again, taking out the Stanley Cup because you can't really factor it in this decision, are his chances better?
Yeah, they would be better, you know, and I think, you know, when we look at this award, it's usually what were the baseline expectations going into the year versus how the team exceeded. And, you know, the baseline expectations for the Blues during the year were the playoff team. Like, going in with all the moves that they made in free agency, we thought they were going to be very good. We thought they could contend for Stanley Cup. Of course, it didn't begin that way. So, yeah, if Berube was there the whole year, I think he probably would have gotten maybe a bigger swell. That said, the fact that, you know, Barry Trotz did it the whole year with the Islanders, who lost their captain and pretty much had nobody, no defensive help at all, and somehow, you know, produce, you know, the two best goalies and one of the best, actually the best defensive team, probably puts him over the edge.
I guess what I'm wondering, Emily, is Berube, is he a finalist mostly because of the turnaround? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, had they been good all year, would he still be getting the consideration?
Yeah, well, that's the thing with John Cooper, you know, it's, you know, how do you judge what the support is? Is it, you know, who did the best coaching job or who defied expectations the most? And historically, it's been who defies expectations the most. That's where we're leaning for Trotz. But, you know, if you look at with the best coaching job, really, it's John Cooper, because what the Tampa Bay Lightning achieved this year was incredible in the regular season.
Emily, I think if you look at the two that Ryan O'Reilly is up for, the Selke for best defensive forward, and certainly the Lady Bing for most gentlemanly, you can make a case for O'Reilly to win both. What are your predictions for those two awards?
Yeah, no, I definitely, Lady Bing's a tough one too, and I hate to take all the cop-outs here, but it's one of those things where, like, how are we judging this? I really think the officials should vote on it because they see the most on the ice, mm-hmm. But I think you've got as good a chance as anyone in that award. As for the Selke, I think it really comes down to him and Mark Stone, you know, the Ottawa Senators / Vegas Golden Knights is where he ended the year. Both of them were just tremendous this year, and I do think there's a very, very good chance O'Reilly wins the award, but I wouldn't be shocked if it was Stone.
All right, so let's go back, and we all love the awards. We're going to be watching tonight. We are interested in it. But there's still a, I don't know if hangover is the right word, but there's still this, even though it happened a week ago, and we just had the parade here on Saturday, for a lot of people, it's hard to stop thinking about what happened. So the way it transpired, the way they went to seven games, and the game Bennington had, and the fact they kind of dominated that game overall in terms of scoring, did this work out the way you thought it was going to work out?
You know, once you get to a game seven in sports, you never know. It could go either way. It's really 50-50. I really didn't expect this, though. You know, beginning of the year, I thought this was a team that could contend for the Stanley Cup. The way the season went, I didn't think so. Once they got into the playoffs, each round, I'm like, there's no way they can sustain it. There's no way they can sustain it. And, yeah, the way it transpired in the Stanley Cup final is really inspirational and memorable. And inspirational is a new word I'm going to use.
That's fine. We like it.
Thanks. Yeah, come on. Let's just do that.
It just started here on 101 ESPN. Emily, what about Jordan Binnington for Rookie of the Year? I know Pettersson got the first 4 months of the season, and people, heck, we were saying he's a lock for Rookie of the Year from Vancouver. But then Jordan Binnington took over, and if you cast your vote the day after the season ended, you look at what Binnington did over the course of the time he played, and just extrapolate. You don't even have to extrapolate it out. Just look at Jordan Binnington's year and compare it to Elias Pettersson's year. Who do you think was better?
Yeah, it's a tough call. I think the only thing weighing Jordan Binnington down in this situation, and the reason he's not going to win the award more than likely, is sample size. He just didn't play enough games. And for this award, it'd be usually like, who is the rookie who over the course of the season did the best? I know you mentioned Elias Pettersson did have a drop-off towards the end of his year, but he was just competing at historic rates in the beginning of the year. The numbers he put up were the best offensive numbers we've seen since Crosby and Ovechkin entered the league. They were really incredible. So that's why he's going to win the award. But you're right. If I'm comparing them back and forth, you know, it's who is more important to their team. And that's also a tough question, too, because really the Canucks were a team that had no expectations. Pettersson comes in, changes the complex of what we're talking about with that franchise. And I think that's why he's going to win the award. Same though with Binnington. It's a team that never had goaltending. He comes in, he saves them. But there was other guys in front of him that were helping out just as much. You know, the defensive structure tightened up. Guys were scoring who were maybe snake-bitten early in the year.
Regarding Binnington, he's one of the guys who's going to make some more money during this offseason. If you had to guess, what do you think he ends up with? What kind of contract from the Blues?
It's such a tough call because there really is no comparables, right? Like, we can't say, like, oh, yeah, you know, this is the exact contract that Matt Murray got with the Penguins. You know, there's really nothing there. I know that he's going to be paid handsomely. I think the cap hit is going to be high. I wouldn't be shocked if they go for a bridge deal, though, with both sides. His agency and the Blues say, like, okay, we're not going to agree on a huge term and huge money at that term. We'll just go with huge money in a short term.
And the Blues have a great relationship with Mike Liut, his agent. Obviously, Liut is a former Blue, but a lot of the Blues players led by Vladimir Tarasenko are represented by Octagon. And as you see all the time when deals are signed, those sorts of relationships make a big difference.
They do, you know, and I think it's always about the specific agent, the specific player, and the specific GM. You know, I also think that when you win a Stanley Cup, decisions sometimes are made with a bit of a rosier glass. Like I keep referencing the Washington Capitals last year, but, you know, they did all they could to keep the band back together after they won. So I have a feeling the Blues are going to do a lot of the same. Yeah, you're right, the relationship between Mike Liut and Octagon and the Blues certainly will help matters, but I think it's a situation of both sides. Jordan Binnington finally found his home, his number one starting role that he coveted for so long. The Blues finally found a goaltender that's, you know, adequate, beyond adequate. So they're going to figure it out.
They're not going to be able to keep everybody during the offseason. We know somebody's going to be gone. Our candidate most likely to leave, at least one of them, is Carl Gunnarsson, just because of his contract situation. And it's impossible to keep everybody. So as the team, and I know this is probably a difficult thing to answer right now, but if you were guessing how the Blues change as the offseason progresses, what's likely to happen for them?
Yeah, you know, Carl Gunnarsson's a guy I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up playing at home in Sweden next year. Like, you know, this was his NHL goodbye. He's 32 years old. It was awesome goodbye, but this is it. Patrick Maroon's another guy, like, you know, maybe they do what the Caps did last year, keep the band back together, sign him to a one-year deal, two-year deal. He probably wants a little more term. I don't know if he's going to get it at his age, although he did show he was really valuable in the playoffs. But the real key to this offseason for me is the RFAs. They have so many of them. I think it's 8 or 9. And Jared Bennington's obviously the one that everyone's talking about, but there's some other big decisions they're going to have to make. You know, there's some obvious guys they're going to keep that are RFAs. Barbashev's an RFA. Sunquist, maybe one of those two is, and they're obviously so important for the fourth line. But I also look at a guy like Robbie Fabry. Like, that's the biggest question mark for me. They, after all of his injuries, they gave him a one more deal to see if he could do it, and he fell out of favor at the end of the playoffs. Like, do they finally just cut ties with this player?
They just won the Cup. Everybody knows that. But is there anything they need?
No, they need nothing. They need to celebrate this and rest up and try to do it again next year.
Emily, have a great time at the award ceremony tonight. We appreciate you taking some time. And thanks for all your help during the course of the season and the playoffs, too. You put in a lot of airtime here on 101 ESPN, and we do appreciate it.
Oh, we appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, Emily, take care. That is Emily Kaplan from ESPN.com with us on 101 ESPN. Well, they say it's not how hard you fall, it's how fast you get back up. But sometimes you've just got to stay down. That's next before With All Due Respect on 101 ESPN.